Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we look at the National Geographic cover story on twins, alike but not alike. Those of us who are not twins always are fascinated, I think, by the question, what would it be like to have a twin? And what about an identical twin? The magazine is filled with pictures of identical twins. And also some remarkable stories. There have been studies going on for a number of years now looking at numerous identical twins who have been separated at birth, and the magazine highlights this story. Two brothers, both named Jim, born in Ohio in 1939, put up for adoption as babies, raised by different couples who happened to give them the same first name. They reconnected with each other in 1979 and uncovered a string of similarities and coincidences. Both were 6 feet tall, 180 pounds, not unusual, but both had dogs named Toy, not a common name for a dog, and taken family vacations in St. Pete Beach in Florida. Both married women named Linda, divorced them. Their second wives were both named Betty. They named their sons James Allen, A-L-A-N, and James Allen, A-L-L-A-N. They both served as part-time sheriffs. They had home carpentry projects. They suffered severe headaches. They smoked Salem cigarettes and drank Miller Lite beer. They had the same crooked smile. Their voices were indistinguishable, and they admitted to leaving love notes around the house for their wives. Just one of the studies. Well, there's a new twist to all of this, too, now, which the article outlines, and that's epigenetics. Described this way, some things you can put in pencil and some in pens. Things written in pen you can't change, that's DNA. But things written in pencil you can, that's epigenetics. And so now, in addition to the study of twins to learn about heredity and environment, there's now epigenetics, and we'll talk about that with our guest. Pete Miller is our guest. Peter Miller is senior editor at National Geographic, specializes in adventure and science stories, author of The Smart Swarm, which is about intelligent group behavior in nature. He's been at National Geographic for 30 years, traveled around the world looking at excavating an Egyptian tomb, following chimpanzees in the wild, helicoptering into Mount St. Helens, chasing tornadoes, and fending off killer bees. He and his wife went on a carbon diet for a month about the an article about the importance of energy conservation as a means to delay climate change. And Peter is with us this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Obviously, a special call out to those of you who may be a twin, because, and particularly identical twins, it would be very interesting to hear from you this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email address, feel free to use that, is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Kathleen. Good morning.
Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Did you want to be a twin when you were a kid? Do you ever think about that?
You know, I didn't. In my years in elementary school, I didn't have any identical twins in school. But in my family, we do have twins. We have identical twins, and we also have fraternal twins.
Hmm.
I think every family does, don't they?
No, I don't think they do. But,
well, twins are actually more common than you think.
That's what I was thinking. And more common these days with fertility drugs.
For sure. Yes, although identical twins, I don't think there's any link has been shown between the fertility drugs and identical twins, as opposed to fraternal twins, who are really just more like siblings,
mm-hmm.
because they don't share the same DNA the way that identical twins do. Identical twins share DNA because they come from the same egg, an egg that splits and forms two people.
I see. And the story that I started with, which I found the most remarkable one, these Jim guys from Ohio.
Yeah, are those Jims, right.
Oh, my gosh. Are those just freak stories, Peter? Or are there a lot of those kinds of stories?
No, you know, the study that the two Jims kicked off at the University of Minnesota found 160 or more pairs of twins who had been separated at birth. And many of them had similar stories, not quite as dramatic as the two gems. I mean, the string of similarities there almost, you know, defies belief. But together, they really give you the impression that identical twins are sort of destined to follow their genetic instruction manual. You know, I mean, you can put them in different families, but they end up the same.
Which makes you ask a pretty deep question, is it all genetics?
Yes. Well, if you look at the photographs in our magazine, in the January issue, the faces staring out at you.
Oh.
I mean, the message that tells you sort of intuitively is, yes, that genetics is extraordinarily influential in making us who we are. And that's sort of the message that we get from science these days when scientists are exploring the genome and the power that the genes have to make us who we are, whether we're, you know, funny or smart or tall or athletic. I think the scientists have discovered over the years that it's really a mix of our genetic inheritance and then what happens to us during our lives, whether it's education or the experiences that we have,
mm-hmm.
kind of nutrition we have, whether we smoke or not. All those things can affect the way we turn out.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a tangled tale, and that's really where twins come in, because when you enlist twins, identical twins especially, into a science research, you can start to untangle a little bit what makes you the way you are, say, IQ, how much of that is genetic and how much of it is environment.
Right. And tell me about this new component. Scientists have been studying twins for some years. What is epigenetics, and how does that figure into the study of twins?
Well, if you start with identical twins have the same DNA because they come from the same egg. So you would think that they would be identical. But in fact, identical twins are not identical. They vary in many, many different ways. And as they get older, they get more different. Part of the reason for that is a system of chemical switches in our bodies called the epigenome or epigenetics. And these are chemical reactions that act upon our genes to turn them on or off, or to make them louder or softer. In other words, we inherit a specific DNA sequence, and you can't change that. That's the way it is. That's permanent. But we also have a system, sort of like software that runs hardware, and the software manages the hardware. It turns genes on or off. And if you have certain genes that are turned on or off at certain times, it can have rather dramatic effects. I mean, there. A lot of cancer research is focusing on ways in which genes that are supposed to be on or supposed to be off are misregulated, and there are even some drugs now that address these epigenetic chemical reactions to see if they can turn the gene back on or turn it off, depending on what it's supposed to be doing.
And so those genes deal with our health primarily, or what are they for?
The ones that the researchers are most interested in are ones that have been identified as being related to diseases, because if there's a way that we can use epigenetic chemical switches to treat a disease, that would be fantastic. If you have a disease that's genetic, in other words, that you inherit a certain susceptibility to the disease, you can't change that. That's hardwired. But you can change whether you get the disease or not, or whether you have the disease, because a switch is malfunctioning to turn a gene on or off that's supposed to be. Of course, we have genes for everything. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of genes in our body, and they control everything that our cells do. And most of the time, the genes are not functioning. In fact, one of the most important things that epigenetic regulation does is it tells genes what to be in, when they're first starting out. So the cells all start out, you know, as stem cells, and then they have to become liver cells or heart cells or brain cells. And it's all the same DNA in each of the cells. The epigenetic regulation is what makes a liver cell, or a heart cell, and it's kind of a memory in the cell that says, you know, you are a heart cell. Do what heart cells are supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. So how does epigenetics manifest itself in identical twins?
Well, there are cases where, for example, one twin will develop breast cancer and another won't.
I see.
And certain types of breast cancer, not most types, but certain types are known to be inherited, highly genetically influenced. Why is that? Why does one person who has the same DNA as her sister, mm-hmm. why does she get it and the other one doesn't? So these tests, this research would like to say, well, if they have the same DNA, then it's probably not the DNA that's causing the difference. It's probably something in the environment, or it's probably some experience, like smoking or exposure to some chemical, that's causing the change. And if that is, if the mechanism by which the environment is influencing and causing the disease is epigenetic, if it's, in other words, if the program, the instructions to turn the gene on or off, are being influenced by exposure to smoking or to some chemical in the environment, then you can treat that with drugs.
Why? And if people have questions about that area, feel free to call. Let's talk about the experience of being a twin for a moment.
Sure.
I love this picture. My favorite picture is of Don and Dave, the wired the same truck drivers.
Yeah, who, great guys.
And they just look exactly alike. There's a little bit of a difference in color in what they're wearing. But
I had trouble keeping them apart. In fact, the only when I interviewed them, the only way I remembered who, was one had a brown shirt on and one had a blue. And I wrote down in my notebook, you know, Dave, brown shirt, Don, blue shirt.
Even they have these really long beards, and even the gray in their beards is identical.
Yes, they have the exact same salt and pepper pattern in their beards, yeah. Of course, they don't both have to have long beards, right?
Right,
They enjoy being twins.
Yeah, and you went to this twins event in Ohio, I believe, where a lot of people were there, and I imagine they enjoy being twins. They enjoy looking exactly the same and dressing the same way. Why?
Yeah, every August in Twinsburg, Ohio, they have the Twins Days Festival, and thousands of twins come, and it's like a big family reunion for them. Some of them have been coming for 20 years or more. And they come back every year to celebrate being twins, because, you know, when twins are out in the rest of society, they get a lot of attention, you know, not always welcome. But when they come to a festival where everybody's a twin, they don't have to. They can kind of let their guard down and be open, because everybody there knows what it's like being a twin.
Right. And people, various companies, go to this gathering as well. What are they looking for in these twins?
Well, as I mentioned, twins are extraordinarily valuable resource for research. So companies like skin cream companies will come and set up a booth at the festival, and then they will invite twins to come visit them and sit down, have their faces photographed by high-resolution cameras to record the quality of their skin, you know, whether one twin has skin that looks a little leathery and another has skin that looks, you know, smooth and young. And then they interview them. They ask them, you know, lots and lots of questions to try and figure out why would identical twins have different skin quality. And, you know, the answer might be, well, one brother lives in Arizona and loves gardening, so he's out in the sun all the time. And the other one is an accountant, you know, and lives in Cleveland and never gets out in the sun, and he's the one with the young-looking skin. This is very important for the researchers, not just for skin cream companies, but also for cancer, for drug-dependent, alcoholism, heart disease. There was a group. There was a group there from Hungary. In fact, two doctors were inviting twins to have their cardiovascular system examined, and they were. The doctors were identical twins.
Oh, my goodness.
They were absolutely identical.
Did you feel like a weirdo being the only non-twin there?
It does not take long for you feel like the odd person when you're surrounded by twins.
I imagine. Let's go to phone calls. We'll take them in a moment. We're talking about twins this hour, and there have been scientists studying twins for a variety of reasons. Peter has outlined those. It is the cover story of National Geographic for the month of January, Twins Alike But Not Alike. And the senior editor who did this story is with us this hour, Peter Miller. Here's our phone number. One line is open. You can also send us an email. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. And the email is talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls for Peter. Benita in Green Bay, our first caller. Hi, Benita.
Hi. Years ago, when I don't know if it was Phil Donahue or Oprah Winfrey's show, they had a case of identical triplets that had the same, and these there were boys that had been separated at birth, and they had the very same type of, you know, amount of similarities that first case that was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
All different kind of things. I mean, as far as look-alike, they you know, you could definitely tell they were identical. But the type of juice they liked, all kind of different things that, and they had been separated at birth.
What have scientists found, if you can give us a summary, Peter, of the studies, are most pronounced in twins who have been separated, the similarities, and what are the most pronounced differences?
Well, the similarity that struck me was the intelligence level, the IQ level. Twins, identical twins that take IQ tests, they score as close to one another on IQ tests, typically, as the same person taking the test twice.
Oh my, interesting.
So sort of your potential intelligence level, you know, the raw material you have to work with is very similar if you're an identical twin. There are things like arthritis. Diseases like arthritis, on the other hand, I believe, are more environmentally influenced. So you might have a certain predisposition because arthritis runs in your family, but it's more likely to be caused by environmental factors than by genetics.
Mm-hmm. What about mental health issues?
Well, there's been a lot of research into things like Alzheimer's and schizophrenia, and autism, and all of those have strong genetic links. Autism in particular, if one identical twin has autism syndrome, there's a 70% chance that the other will.
Hmm.
Whereas with fraternal twins, if one fraternal twin has autism, there's only about a 10% chance that his brother or sister will have autism.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. Thanks, Benita, for the call. Laura in Madison. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a question. I have twins that are 19 months, both girls, and we were told when I was pregnant, we did an ultrasound, that they were fraternal because they each had their own set of membranes surrounding the embryo. And now that they're born and their pediatrician is questioning whether they're identical or not because they are so similar and pretty much just their father and I and their grandmothers can tell them apart on a regular basis. And she's saying that within the first 3 days after conception, the membranes, the egg can actually separate, and then it would appear that they were fraternal when, and actually they were identical, coming from the same egg. And I'm just kind of wondering what the chances of that are and if it's worth the investment to look into whether or not they are identical.
I think it is worth the investment, just so that you have that information. And I believe the tests have come down in price fairly dramatically to have it confirmed, you know, definitively through genetic or testing. And I believe, you know, don't hold me to this, but I believe that the that twins, identical and fraternal, can share or not share placentas. So I wouldn't say that was definitive.
Hmm.
But you can find out for sure with a genetic test.
I think
it would be helpful.
We have another along the same lines from Devin LaCrosse. Do you have to have the DNR test to determine if they are identical? For instance, with comparison of earlobes, I know twins who are 28, they look and sound alike, but they don't know if they are identical because when they were born, there were two placentas. In those days, they believed the identical twins would be in the same placenta. They can't afford the DNA testing, but we're all curious.
Well, I think there are different ways. I don't know about the earlobe test. I think that they used to use blood tests to determine whether twins are identical or fraternal, but I would invest the money. I mean, it seems like it could be important information.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Laura, very much for the call. You must have your hands full, huh?
Yes, it's very exciting. Every day is new.
I'm sure it is. I can't imagine being the mother of twins. It must be so hard the first year of life, Peter. So hard.
I think it's more than twice the work.
Right. We go to Linda in Milwaukee next. Hi, Linda.
Good morning to you. The Discovery Channel in the past few years have had several documentaries exploring twins, focusing especially on conjoined twins. And one of the things I heard on more than one occasion is that all left-handed people living today were originally part of a set of twins, the other twin having died and been absorbed in utero.
And whoa,
because the percentage of left-handed people does correspond roughly to the percentage of twin births, I'm wondering if this is true. Are all left-handed people living today, or I should say, were they once part of twins in the uterus?
You know, I read that same idea when I was doing research for the article, but I don't think that that idea has ever been proven. So, I mean, it's an intriguing idea, but I don't think that there's much agreement on that in the scientific community that's actually the fact. The other issue you raise about the vanishing twins is also very intriguing. In fact, there are probably more of us that had twins or were twins, and our twin didn't survive to be born.
Well, the left-handedness of it is what interests me because that would indicate they were part of mirror twins, one being right-handed.
Yeah.
The one who died was right-handed,
right.
And the one living is the left-handed one. Are mirror twins considered to be identical? And the other thing that I heard on that program on more than one occasion is that twins can, this was during the exploration of conjoined twins, that twins can separate normally, the egg can separate normally, and within a very short, specific 3 or 4 day time period, rejoin, and that's what produces sometimes the conjoined twin. Do you believe that to be true?
I don't know. I did not research conjoined twins for the article, so I couldn't say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Linda. Maybe some more investigation needs to be done on that left-handedness. That's fascinating.
Well, you know, another reason why left-handedness comes up is that a higher than normal percentage of identical twins are left-handed.
Oh.
But whether that's, you know, related to, you know, why that is, it hasn't been proven.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. And when she mentioned mirror twin, what is the difference between a mirror twin and an identical twin?
Well, mirror twins are where one is left-handed and the other is right-handed. One will have a cavity in a molar, say, in the left side of their mouth, and the other will have a cavity in the exact same molar on the right side. In other words, they'll have swirls, you know, like hair whirls in the back of their head that go different directions.
Oh, my.
It's as if you're looking at yourself in a mirror.
Oh.
And it happens because they split, the egg splits very early in the, in the process of a differentiation.
So one has a stronger left brain and the other right?
That I don't know. I wouldn't want to say that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Linda, for the call. Is it Bridget Ty? Is that your name?
Yep, that is my name.
From New London, and you're an identical twin.
I am. I was told, actually, I was fraternal most of my life until I had a child of my own, and my midwife just laughed at me thinking that we're fraternal. And she's like, no, you're identical. I'm sorry. You guys look almost exactly alike. I have three other sisters, and I could look more like them than my own twin. And we just look almost exactly alike. I was always a little bit bigger. Like you were saying that sometimes identical twins aren't exactly alike. That would be like really hard to do. And we do go through similar things in our lives, even though we're not by each other. We'll go through the same patterns, the same kind of interactions. So, and we'll go up to someone and we'll say something. I'll say something to someone, and then 10 minutes later she'll show up. And she'll say the exact same thing
No.
in the exact same way. So our brains work a lot alike, but we do have our differences, for sure.
Uh-huh. And what about this experience in your life? Is it great to have a twin?
It is fabulous. It's like every day I just consider it like a blessing and a miracle. I think she's like beyond my best friend. You couldn't even, like, as someone that is an identical twin, it's like you couldn't even really imagine what it would be like. And we're so close. I mean, she lives in Washington State and I live here, and that's like hard, but it's like beyond words, like how you have that buddy that can connect with you in that way, that thinks like you, that no matter what, they're going to understand you and know where you're at. So that's just amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. Beyond my best friend. I'll bet a lot of twins you encountered said the same thing. But how did they, Peter?
Yes, they did. In fact, that's, you know, apart from the similarities between twins, I think the bond that twins have is really, really fascinating. And it's so deep, it's really almost hard for the rest of us to understand. I mean, many of us, I think, would envy having a relationship so deep with another person.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, but I've also encountered the twins that it's very sad to me, but for whatever reason happens where they're like enemies, like that person is like, you know, a thorn in their side in a way, or like when you look at, maybe they look at that person and they're so much similar that if they see anything negative or something they don't like, that's always in your face. And if people can't come to terms with maybe their
yeah.
own self,
mm-hmm.
like you're seeing this mirror of yourself all the time, and that might be, I've seen like a handful of twins too that are identical that just do not like each other at all, and that to me is kind of sad, but whatever, that's just what they chose.
Right. Peter?
Well, sure. I mean, it's like, you know, in any family, you know, some people you get along with and some people you don't, and I imagine the pressure on twins, you know, to be kind of special is also difficult.
What she said is interesting, that you may see what you don't like about yourself and the other person, which could be hard if you've denied that part of yourself, right?
Yes. I guess. I hadn't thought about that. Huh.
Bridget, I thank you very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is senior editor, National Geographic, and has the cover story on twins this month, alike but not alike. And we have phone lines open for Peter right now. Joan in Fontana, hi. Joan, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
All right, go right ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't. I would like to ask your guest if there was any research done on that. I think you called it the epigenetic system that turns on and off the genetic triggers. If that could be voluntary, under a voluntary system.
You mean, can you affect it deliberately, or?
Yeah. I mean, can you work on something that could be genetic, but if you work on it, you can kind of help that trigger not to occur?
Well, you know, the research in this is really, really, really early.
But it is being done?
But yes, they have identified certain chemicals that are very important for pregnant mothers to consume to make babies healthy. And conversely, there are toxins that can enter into, and this is a vulnerable period of our lives when we're for the fetus to be developing, where an epigenetics can be affected. But if you're talking about like another interesting idea that was proposed in the 19th century and then was revived in the 30s was the idea that, well, maybe if I learn music, learn to be a musical expert, that I can then make my children give that gift to my children. But that has not, so far that has not been, that kind of inheritance has not been shown.
That hasn't been pursued, is that right?
No, that has not been demonstrated. What has been demonstrated is if your village, say, undergoes starvation, that your children will their epigenetic inheritance can make them vulnerable to certain diseases. Like diabetes and heart disease and obesity. Mm-hmm. And that can be passed down even to third and fourth generations.
Really?
So, that kind of drastic experience can be passed from one generation to another. That's a very eerie idea that you may be the way you are because of something that happened to your grandparents.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joan.
I hope they continue investigating that side of the...
Well, there's lots and lots of research going on in epigenetics right now.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Joan, for the call. Terry in Heartland, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I had a question about going back to the absorbed twin. Is there a test to find out if, for instance, if I absorbed my twin?
I don't know. I don't know. Much about the absorbed twin phenomenon.
Okay, I'll pursue that further. I would just explain so many things to me about just my own life if I were able to identify that.
What would it say to you?
I'm kind of ambidextrous in so many ways of thinking and action and doing, and so that it would go beyond that. But that's an example.
Well, that's a nice way to be, huh? To be ambidextrous?
Yes.
I'm sure it is. Huh. All right, Terry, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Barb and LaForge. Hi, Barb.
Hi, it's LaForge.
Oh, LaForge. Hi, Barb.
Hi, I'm an identical twin also, and I think I have a kind of a different experience, and maybe it's because of my age. I'm a little older. I'm in my 60s, so I was born in the 40s, and... there was a great deal of emphasis on being the same. So when I got to college and my sister got to college, we essentially became very different people.
How so?
Well, you know, we just went our own separate ways, and we are really not very close at all anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And I think it's a burden in some ways for both of us, because of the pressure to both succeed or both succeed at the same things, or, you know, we were, I don't know, it's just, a, it was, I don't think it was an unpleasant experience, but it was a very different one.
Peter.
I've heard that, that there's a kind of, that there can be a kind of competitive intensity or pressure, you know, to be as good as your twin or like your twin. I'm sure that must be very difficult. When you think about, you know, going off to college and then and sort of being different after that, that makes a lot of sense because until that point, you two were probably raised under the same circumstances, right? And you have the same DNA.
Right, yeah.
So what's going to make you different? It's going to be the things that, that you experience on your own, individually.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And, you know, going off to college and discovering new things, meeting new people, that changes you.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, we missed what you just said, Barb.
I said, you know, sometimes it's still not real pleasant having an identical twin because if something bad happens to one of you, you know, the pressure is that you try to make it good and it doesn't always work. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's my whole theory. But, I mean, it was, we still do, I mean, I will go buy a red dress and find out that my sister bought a red dress within the last 2 weeks also. So, it's, you know, you have those kind of weird things that always happen.
Right. Yeah, that must be strange. Thank you. Thanks,
sure.
Barb. And let's look at the importance of nurture, too, because of all these twin studies. Where does nurture make a big difference? Where is it important in, you know, twins have been separated and then and they were raised in maybe very different families. And so nurture makes a difference, doesn't it?
What they found, surprisingly, in the Minnesota study was that family nurture, the parenting seemed to make less impact on children than we expected, maybe hoped. In other words, the twins that were separated and placed in different families, sometimes in very different circumstances, ended up the same in certain ways. But the researchers who did this study emphasized to me that the parenting, especially, you know, loving, nurturing, is hugely important to bring out the potential, to enable children to be as good as they as their potential is. And in truth, a lot of these families, they were all getting, you know, good upbringing. They were all getting support, but they were, so, well, one might be blue collar, one might be, you know, white collar, you know, one might be a very religious family, one might not be, and yet they all, by the measures that they measured, they turned out very similar. The twins did.
More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655. Our guest is Peter Miller, senior editor at National Geographic, specializes in adventure and science stories, and has a cover story in this month's issue of National Geographic on twins, alike but not alike. To more of you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's an email that's come in, Peter, from Mike in River Falls. I'm the grandfather of newly born identical twin girls. What's the most important thing parents and grandparents can do to raise healthy twins, especially in encouraging individual identity, and yet obviously not denying the fact that they are identical?
Well, that's the $60,000 to $4,000 question. Is that how do you you know, give your children every advantage that they can have? And I think you know, what comes to mind is kind of get out of their way and let them, you know, let them grow up, let them be who they're going to be, but give them as much love and support as you can. There was a theory back in the early 60s that it was healthy to separate twins, and in order to, you know, force them to become individuals. And I think that was a very misguided idea. When you talk to twins, you really come to appreciate how valuable their bond is. And, you know, to get in between that seems to be misguided to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that I don't think you're going to prevent them from becoming individuals anyway, because after all, they are individuals, and they each have a mix of talents and probably flaws. Anyway,
Bruce in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
I'm 60 years old, and I'm the son of a twin, and my father was a son of a twin. And so I've seen many, many different things through my life. But one of the peculiar things is on both sides of our family, mother and father, there's different, I mean, like three, four sets of twins. And I have some first cousins that when the cell phone was not such a prominent thing, one lived in Denver, one lived in Wisconsin. Sometimes they would pick up the telephone to call each other at the same time and couldn't get through. It was really strange, and I heard that in their lives about two or three times. Another thing that happened to me peculiar, which is totally off the wall, I went into the Navy, and I ran into an identical lookalike of myself. And,
wow.
You know, for the person to look at another person, because everybody says, oh, you look like Paul over there, or you look like Steve.
Right.
But for me to look at him and, oh, my God.
And you knew
it was
that
just really bizarre.
You knew that without somebody telling you that?
Yeah. Well, I was getting in trouble on this ship, and an old officer was constantly calling me the wrong name. And then I stood in the chow line one day, and I turned around, and I was looking in a mirror. It was the most bizarre thing. And we came really close friends and played all kinds of tricks on people, but that's a bizarre situation.
Oh, that was kind of fun, though.
Yeah, very much so.
Has that ever happened to you?
I'll leave you alone.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. You too. Has that ever happened to you, Peter? You met somebody who looked just like you?
I've been told, you know, things like that, although I didn't see it myself.
Yeah,
you know,
people have said you look just like somebody
exactly
else.
Exactly, right. Hmm. But, you know, these sort of twin moment stories are popular discussion point at, you know, festivals and so on, twin festivals. And I heard quite a few of them when I was talking to twins. Like one of the most common was that a twin would pick out a gift for her sister or his brother, and would send it off, and then would receive the same gift in the mail from them.
Just buy it for yourself, then.
Yeah.
What about this? This is another remarkable picture. The two guys who were twins, who married the two women who were twins, identical, and then they each had a son and a daughter, and they all live in the same house.
Yes, and you know, those guys were smart because they understood that their wives did not want to be separated.
Huh.
I'm not saying that everybody, that, you know, two couples and their kids can all live in the same house peacefully in many circumstances, but being identical twins, the brothers, who did not feel that they needed to live together, they did that as a loving gesture to their wives, who did want to live together.
Huh.
And, you know, from a genetic point of view, this is interesting because one couple had a boy and the other couple had a girl, and they are cousins, but genetically they're also brother and sister.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you would think if you've got identical twins here that you would probably be in love with your wife's sister,
no,
too.
No, that was another really interesting thing. The twins, this was something I heard universally, that someone who falls in love with a twin has no interest in the other twin.
Hmm.
Even identical twins.
Well,
who marry identical twins.
Why would that be?
That's a fascinating question.
Huh.
But they swear it's true that you know, that they love the one that they love, and they don't love the one that looks exactly like
the one they're with, who looks
right.
like the one that, yeah, that's interesting. This whole subject is fascinating. You must have found it so. There's so many layers to it, aren't there?
Yes, yeah. And that's what I liked about it, that it has such, you know, human interest, but also the science behind it is so fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Barb in Lodi, hi.
Hi. My question is, has there been a lot of study on why women have twins or multiple sets of twins? My grandmother had three sets of twins.
Ooh.
Back in the 30s and 40s.
That's a lot of twins.
Yes, it is. There have been lots of studies, and there seems to be, from the research that I've encountered, there seems to be more likelihood that fraternal twins, in other words, non-identical twins, will run in families more than identical twins. The prevailing belief is that identical twins are random, that they do not. You're no more likely to have identical twins than just because they run in your family. But so they've looked at all the different circumstances around, you know, conception and nutrition and family circumstances to try and figure out, you know, why fraternal twins might be more common. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that anything has been conclusive.
That's what she had. She had a set of boys, a set of girls, and a set of boy, girl.
Whew.
All fraternal.
That's a lot.
It sure is a lot. That's a lot.
Plus five other kids.
Oh, my goodness.
Boy.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. Thank you, Barb.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Robin in Lake Delton. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My father and his brother were identical twins, so much so that even their Marine Corps pictures, the two of them couldn't tell themselves apart.
Hmm.
And I'm really interested in inherited illnesses. My father and his brother were both bipolar. My father also was paranoid schizophrenic, but his brother was not. And my father was an alcoholic, thankfully in recovery when he died, but my uncle was not. Is there anything that can explain any of that?
Well, there have been there has been a lot of interest, a lot of research done on psychiatric illnesses, like the ones that you mentioned, and in general, the research has shown that twins tend to share those kinds of diseases. In other words, both will have it more than the average population, or more than fraternal twins, which indicates, since they share the same DNA, that genetics is having a strong influence on that, that's being passed down through their genes. But that doesn't mean that it's that they're determined or fated to have those diseases. And so you can have one. Like in the story, I write about two brothers, one of whom has severe autism and the other of whom has a very, very opposite case, where he's, you know, super bright,
mm-hmm.
but has some social problems. Even though autism is a highly heritable disease, they can be very different. And that's, that's life, isn't it? You might have a 70% chance, but you still have 30% that you won't.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get all kinds of combinations like that.
Hmm.
Interesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin, for your call. We have maybe time for one more phone call. Barbara, hi.
Hi. I, too, am an identical twin, and I am a mature identical twin. And first of all, I'd like to make a comment and then just explain to you a theory that my identical twin and I have. I, first of all, would say in regard to an identical twin falling in love with the other identical twin's spouse, is that twins are so much the same, but we're not clones, and that through our own experience of life, we develop very different and unique personalities. And so that would explain why there's no interest in the identical twin.
Mm-hmm.
So just a comment on that. And the other thing that I'd like to mention is that my sister and I were fortunate to be raised in a very nurturing, loving family, and I think we were an example of allowing the twins to develop in the way that they were meant to. As we were young, we dressed alike, we had a lot of fun with that. But when we were ready to go our separate ways and wear different clothing and explore different interests, although they tended to be very much the same, our parents nurtured that and allowed that. We had a lot of fun in high school switching classes and pulling a lot of pranks, and even on our boyfriends once we switched at the drive-in and had a lot of fun with that. As we grew, we have become a very individual people, but we have remained very, very close friends. Better than a best friend is a good way to describe it.
Mm-hmm. And there is the answer to the question of how to raise twins. Thank you for the call, Barbara. Peter, thank you so much. It was a fascinating article and discussion. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Peter Miller, our guest this hour, senior editor at National Geographic. It's the cover story of the January issue, Twins, a Like but not alike, and take a look at some of those pictures. They'll just knock you out. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Happy New Year again to you, and we'll be with you tomorrow at 9 o'clock to talk about news of the day. Great conversations ahead on the Ideas Network.